Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor and feminist icon and activist Angelina Jolie, who was born in Los Angeles to two actors, John Voight, who I think most people know because he's an Oscar winner, and Marceline Bertrand, who studied with Lee Strasberg, which was probably her intro to Lee Strasberg, because at age 11, she began studying at the Theater Institute and, you know, performed in some stage productions and took some film studies classes at New York University and joined the renowned Met Theater Group in Los Angeles. At 16, she started modeling and appeared in some music videos. From what I could tell, she grew up very, very fast, Mike. So by the time she starts appearing in films in the 1990s, she's already much more sophisticated than most people coming into roles at her age. She has always seemed old for her age, or older for her age. Now, she goes on to make several movies and has quite the interesting personal life. She is what I would think of as current Hollywood royalty. You know, the way the old stars from the past in the glory days and the golden age of Hollywood, every move would be followed and everything cataloged, every romance documented. This would have been something she was starting to recognize at a very young age. So what do you think in terms of her starting off as being sort of an old soul?
It's really a very astute observation. She grows up in a showbiz family. You know, she's living in the town where she'll be working, right? Her father's a very well-known actor. Both parents, as you stated, they're actors. And so she actually has her first screen appearance as a child. She's growing up fast. Her father's film, Looking to Get Out, in 1982. It's not much of a film. It's not much of a role. But you know what? From when she was a kid, she was on screen. She never really had a career as a child actor per se, but she was on screen going back that far. And then by the early 1990s, she's making quite a few films, not really a major actor yet, but, you know, she's working, she's in the business, as they say, right? And I should pause for a moment and mention something that we'll probably allude to later as well. It can be a mixed blessing to be born into a show business family. So even though as a child actor, she'd been in one of her father's films, for most of their certainly adult lives, they've been estranged. Periodically, they've had reunions and reconciliations, which didn't always last. And so why do I mention that? Well, as we talk about her personal life, but also the fact that because she is, in today's Hollywood, considered Hollywood royalty, you're absolutely right, there's a lot that goes with that. You're a celebrity. You're in the tabloids, whether it's because of your marriage to Brad Pitt and everything that goes along with that, the children you adopt, the humanitarian work you do, this and that. A lot of that is, frankly, not directly related to what you're doing on screen. You know, it's the private life that gets splashed up in the supermarket tabloids. And the fact that she was on the outs with her father, I mean, really bitter estrangement, that's part of the story. So when you're Hollywood royalty, you know, you've got that spotlight on you, and not just for things you do on screen, but your whole life that way. She is a strong person. She has, you know, gone through that. She's held up under that. But since we're talking primarily about the movie career, and we'll mention some of the off-screen matters, I mean, you know, personal life, marriage, kids, whatever. But in terms of the on-screen life, the film that really puts her over, because she's been working in through the 1990s, but it's actually Girl Interrupted in 1999. It really puts her over. She wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. It's a story that's very much set in a mental institution where everyone has issues, needless to say. And you have that kind of like really, really, I don't want to make it sound like a potboiler, but it is in some ways in the sense that you set any story in a mental institution, you're going to have your nurses and your psychiatrists and your patients, you know, whatever is going on up here. But let's put it this way. There's a lot of opportunity to emote, right? There's a lot of emoting going on. And she does that really well, so much so that, you know, she's in a big cast, Winona Ryder, and Brittany Murphy, and Elizabeth Moss, and Jared Leto, and Jeffrey Tambor, and Vanessa Redgrave, and Whoopi Goldberg, Mary Kay Place. It's a big cast of already well-established actors. She holds her own. She wins that Oscar, and she gets critical recognition. It was Stephen Holden in the New York Times when he reviewed the film, Girl Interrupted. Here's what he said about Angelina Jolie, because again, she's known at this point, partly because of who her father is, partly because she's just been working steadily all through the 90s, but she's not really known as you would know a big movie star. But this is the breakthrough. And this is what he says about her performance in Girl Interrupted. Jolie's ferocious, white-hot performance. You know, if we talk about what's known as a pull quote, you know, a blurb that you can use somewhere. That's the kind of blurb that not only gets splashed in movie theater advertising, but you know what? Agents and producers and directors and the people in those seats, they notice things like that. So to me, that's what really launches her. And proof of that comes actually within the next year or two when she makes Lara Croft Tomb Raider in 2001. She is now appearing as an action hero. I don't think it's much as a film particularly, but, you know, I mean, it was a big commercial release. She certainly does well in it. But you know what? She's got that physical presence. She's got that assertive quality as an actor. She has the rangy build and the assertive features. And she's not going to take any prisoners, if you will. You know, she's really assertive that way. And again, I remember seeing Lara Croft Tomb Raider thinking, well, you know, sort of a, you know, like Indy Jones knockoff material, that kind of stuff. It's fun. It's enjoyable. I mean, no great shakes. But you know what? There's no denying her. She is establishing herself as a major star in a period when increasingly female actors in roles like that, you know, we can talk about, you know, Sigourney Weaver in Alien, which is quite a bit earlier, but the way in which, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and then from then even more so into the present day, you have female actors who are playing action heroes or superheroes even, right? Particularly nowadays, superheroes. And in fact, we'll get to this later in the program, but, you know, Angelina Jolie's done some of that. And looking ahead to the months ahead, she'll be in another superhero movie. So back to you.
I like that word ferocious because I think that kind of encompasses her off-screen persona, as well as the way she attacks some of her roles. You didn't mention Gia from 1998, but that actually was when I first heard of her, even though I hadn't seen the movie, where she plays Gia Carangi, a top fashion model from the late 1970s. But Girl Interrupted was the movie that put her on the map. And if you watch that and you already know Angelina Jolie, you might be taken aback by the fact that she appears as a blonde in this movie. But in fact, she's a natural blonde and she dyes her hair dark. So she's actually, you know, showing you her real hair color there. And I remember the Oscars from that year because, you know, it's like, who is this person that just came and walked off with that movie that had so many famous people in it? It was supposed to be a star vehicle for Winona Ryder, who nobody talked about in terms of that movie. It was all about her. Also, if you go back and watch it now, there are two co-stars of the current series, The Handmaid's Tale, who also appear in Girl Interrupted, Clea DuVall and Elizabeth Moss. Now, we should also mention that, you know, it doesn't hurt to be as drop-dead gorgeous as Angelina Jolie is. It makes her fun to look at. She's immediately star material because she is just so gifted physically. And we've talked about this in a show we did about Maleficent, which we'll get to eventually, how, you know, I mean, just the cheekbones alone are just absolutely incredible. So at those Oscars, when they read her name and, you know, she was about to get up and go get the award, she turns to her brother sitting next to her and they exchange this long kiss that people talked about for years. And I think probably from growing up in a house where, you know, you had so many famous people coming in and out, your dad's famous, everybody's famous, you know, you want to be famous. I think they were probably much closer than average people would be because it's like the one port in a storm, the one person who understands you, the one person for whom it doesn't matter whether you're going to be a movie star or not, you're just who you are. So you're right, she does Lara Croft in 2001. And this was popular because it's based on a video game. And I think she held her own in terms of, you know, putting that across because she has so much self-confidence. And, you know, if anybody was going to turn into an action hero, it would have to be Angelina Jolie. She did her own bungee exercises in the movie and hurt herself a couple of times. She injured her ankle when she landed on top of the chandelier. And at one point, you know, her clothes caught on fire from the chandelier. And so they had to take her to the hospital and she came back the next day ready to shoot some more. So I think it's kind of fun that she went from Girl Interrupted to Lara Croft because it immediately took her out of serious actress, you know, taking herself very seriously to something very accessible and something pitched towards fans her own age, people who were interested in video games and wanted to see her play a role like that. Well, you know, when she does this role, one of the filming locations was in Cambodia. And while she's there, that is where she meets and adopts one of her children. And she began visiting refugee camps around the world and doing a lot of humanitarian work. And I think that kind of changed her outlook on acting, because the roles after that, I think, are just completely different from what you think might come next. Because what comes next is Mr. and Mrs. Smith in 2005. And I can't tell you how disappointed I was that that was not a remake of the Alfred Hitchcock Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the one with, you know, Carole Lombard and Robert Montgomery in it. Because that would have been so much fun to have Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt play, you know, in the remake of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But this is about a bored married couple. Each of them are assassins hired by competing agency to kill each other. I mean, it's a great premise, but, you know, although it did well at the box office, I thought they were a boring married couple themselves. Although at this time they were not married. Brad Pitt was still with Jennifer Aniston. They insisted there was nothing going on. But of course, after the movie wrapped, they ended up getting married. Did you want to say any more about Lara Croft or Mr. and Mrs. Smith or anything in that period of time?
Yeah, with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I share your disappointment on those two levels. Initially, I thought, oh boy, a remake of the Hitchcock. And then, oh no, it's not a remake of it. And that the film we actually get is much less than that. And then secondly, the film itself, it's kind of flat. I mean, it was commercially successful, certainly because it's Brad Pitt with Angelina Jolie, a lot of tabloid publicity, if you will, a lot of media attention. It's scoring on all those levels. But you watch the movie itself, and it is kind of flat. Somehow the chemistry, this sounds bizarre to say, but somehow the chemistry is not quite there between Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. So don't ask me why that is, but I want to double back on a point you've been making of late, which has to do with her physical appearance. There's a physical expressiveness. She's got the self-confidence. She's got what I refer to as that rangy build. Some actors just stand still and they're strong, right? But she's oftentimes moving. Where there's a sense of movement there that, you know, when she's in these action hero movies, it's an obvious advantage to be able to move well, but she has a kind of athletic appeal. So it's not just the beauty, but she's actually, I would call beautifully athletic, which sounds kind of odd to say, but she is actually, she moves rather gracefully in, you know, whether it's in a fight scene or running down a street or something, she really holds the screen. She holds our attention. So anyway, with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, again, my feeling that as an actor, she's quite distinctive and she's been in a number of box office hits. Personal taste-wise, I'm not always the biggest fan of some of her movies, but you know what? You can do a lot worse. I mean, she, you know, she's a major movie star in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. She's having fun with it. And I may not be laughing much, but at least I'm smiling. And hey, it's okay to smile sometimes and not have a big out loud laugh, right? And you know, it's like, it's enjoyable. And so I know that sounds like a backhanded compliment. It's not entirely meant that way. It's just that, you know, it's a good, you know, release. You know, you get your popcorn, you watch it, you have a good enough time. Would I want to see it again even? Not necessarily. Does it go on the list of all-time classics? Are you kidding? We'll keep the Hitchcock film there.
Very good point. Very good point. You know, and for a while, at least her personal life was marked by outrageousness and fearlessness. And if this was a Hollywood actors from the 40s, we would have to discuss whether these things were just stunts to, you know, make people take notice of her. But, you know, she seems genuinely odd in some ways, in at least in some of her marriages. She married Johnny Lee Miller in black leather pants and a white blouse. And on the white blouse, she painted his name in her own blood across the back. Then she, that doesn't work out. So she ends up with Billy Bob Thornton. And the two of them get tattoos of each other's names on their bodies and carry around vials of each other's blood around their neck. Now, she had said, you know, she always has had an interest in mortuary science and she collects knives. You know, these are not average kinds of hobbies and interests, but it's either something you say to set yourself apart as being, you know, more interested in the darker side of things. Or you do it just because it's so outrageous, you know it's going to get a reaction. Or it's a way to express yourself that nobody else has considered. I mean, really, there's nothing wrong. It's not going to hurt anybody if you carry somebody's blood around your neck in a vial. But they were so public about it. They talked about it incessantly in interviews and things and their endless undying love. Only, of course, to break up. And then she has to cover that tattoo with another tattoo. And then she ends up with Brad Pitt. So such an interesting, weird trajectory of personal relationships that played out big time in the tabloids. And I don't know if she relished it or if it was just, well, you know, report on whatever you want because that's just who I am. Either way, I could see both of those being the way she saw it. Did you have a sense for that? Did you follow any of those storylines when they were happening?
Well, yes, I couldn't avoid them, whether I even if I wanted to, I couldn't. You know, if you're married to Billy Bob Thornton, how long is that going to last? I mean, he has a volatile personality, and they're both outrageous, or they were in that period in their lives, outrageous people. I share your wonderment there in terms of some of the stuff they did. I mean, the image she projected, you know, to what extent was that just, you know, on me, this is who I am, you know, take it or leave it. To what extent, because she's living her life in the public spotlight, is she hungry for even more publicity? I mean, I don't know the answers here. It's why we're asking the questions. It's just, you know, you see activity like that, behavior like that, and you got to wonder about it. Now, it certainly doesn't hurt any in terms of public recognition and box office and so on. The fact that we're talking about it today, right? That she has that kind of a life or had that. I think the humanitarian work eventually would temper that quite a bit. I mean, some of the early behavior really is out there behavior, if you will. But you know what? That's by our kind of conventional standards as we read the supermarket tabloids or watch the TV shows and talk shows and so on. But you know, when you grow up in that Los Angeles hothouse environment, a lot of that stuff, what you might call aberrant behavior, or at least unusual behavior, that everyone's like that, or a lot of people are, you know, I'm getting at, like, it's not unusual to be unusual that way for whatever the reasons for it. But I think it's partly accounting for the fact that she's always been in the headlines, you know, whether a movie does well or bombs or whatever, she's just kept going because she's a public figure. And after a while, you become famous for being famous, right? You know, you have that kind of publicity value. And again, that's not a mark against her. It actually works in her favor. It helps to bankroll a lot of projects that otherwise might have been difficult to get the money for. She's Angelina Jolie asking for money. How could you say no to her? She'll thank you by carrying around your blood or something. I don't know. She'll thank you one way or another. We should probably segue into now her work as a director, do you think?
Well, I do want to mention Maleficent, which she stars in, before we get to that. And also Salt from 2010, simply because it's about a CIA agent who goes on the run after being accused of being a Russian spy. All right. So that was meant to be written for a man, and Tom Cruise was supposed to play him. He backed out, and then they rewrote it with a female lead and cast Angelina Jolie. This is her chance to do, you know, the James Bond, but as a woman kind of a role. And then when you get to 2014 and Maleficent and 2019, when they make the second one, I think this is really where she kind of gets tired of being the star in front of the camera. And I think this has to do a lot with the fact traveled the world at this point. She has been goodwill ambassador for the UN. She has seen a lot of terrible things. She has met people who have had their lives destroyed by landmines. She's seen and done some things. And I think coming back to make movies seemed frivolous. Also at this point, she has quite a big family. She and Brad Pitt have 6 children, adopted and had, you know, the two of them. So her priorities have changed by this point, but she had always liked the Sleeping Beauty story and had always wanted to make it and always thought it would be fun to play Maleficent because, you know, she's the vengeful fairy. And let's face it, the villain roles are always the juicy ones. By the way, she says she still has those horns in her house somewhere, which does not surprise me at all. And I bet it doesn't surprise you either.
Probably wears them when she's making breakfast. You know, I mean, I'm not surprised. Now, the other thing I would add about Maleficent is the fact, I mean, I'm not a big fan of it, but you know what? It was a huge box office hit. So in terms of public reception, it's one of her biggest hits ever. And so the public loves her in roles like that. But Maria, I share your feeling that, you know, she can play roles like that, but you get the feeling that in her private life and with her priorities, if you will, she really doesn't want to keep doing movies like that. You know, she did that one and she did a sequel. So, you know, she's not averse to a big commercial success and what the public knows her and loves her for. But I think there have also been smaller and more difficult films she's wanted to either act in and specifically direct. I mean, she has that more serious side. And, you know, you can see it coming out, and ironically, in the same period where she's still making movies like Maleficent. But you know what? It's a balance, isn't it? She does some big box office stuff, but then she makes some of the smaller, more difficult, you know, more serious films.
You know, another thing about Maleficent is that she does her own stunts again, and that her prosthetics and makeup were inspired by Lady Gaga. And, you know, as soon as I read that, I thought, oh, yeah, I could totally see that entire getup that Maleficent wears on stage as part of one of Lady Gaga's songs and stories. Her daughter is in it also playing, you know, a youngster she comes across, and she says to the little girl, I don't like children. It's such a funny line when you know that's her actual child. Also that she doesn't actually say it. in the scene with her, it's cut together like that. Can you imagine hearing that from your mother? I don't like children. Now, she says when she was little, like Maleficent, she was told that she was different and felt out of place, too loud, too full of fire, never good at sitting still, never good at fitting in. And then one day I realized something, something I hope you all realize. Different is good. So don't fit in. Don't sit still. Don't ever try to do less than you are. When somebody tells you you're different, smile and hold your head up high and be proud. And as your villain, I would also say, cause a little trouble. It's good for you. So after this, she writes, directs, and produces a movie called In the Land of Blood and Honey. And it's about the Bosnian War. It's about two people who get involved before the war, and then during the war tears them apart and separates them. And the whole movie is about, you know, will they ever get back together, see each other again? What is the war going to do to them all? This was such an interesting movie to watch because it was so well done and so serious and such a good topic and all of those things, that when you realize that she wrote, directed, and produced it, you know, you have to stop and think, is there anything she can't do well? I can't find fault with the writing, directing, or producing of that movie, Mike. What about you?
I hate to say this, but I can find fault with it.
All right, go for it.
I have very mixed feelings about Angelina Jolie as a director. Technically, she's quite capable. She's good, you know, as a director at that level. And her films tend to be either directly war-related or at least about very serious topics. And for me, my main reservation actually relates not so much to the direction in a technical sense, more to the scripting. There's a kind of preachy exposition that I think all of the films she's directed tend to have. In other words, there'll be a scene or scenes where, you know, a general or somebody involved in the wartime conflict has got to like explain something to somebody else. But, you know, strictly speaking, in terms of the scripting process, saying things that would already be known to the other character, but said for the sake of the audience, or thematically underscoring something in a way that a character might not do quite that way in real life, if you will. So in terms of preachy exposition, I'm not the only one who felt that way. I remember I looked at the Variety review for In the Land of Blood and Honey, because I thought, you know, am I the only one who's like not really all with this film? I mean, yes, I admire its intentions, serious subject matter, all that. And the Variety reviewer said that the film, quote, seems to spring less from artistic convictions than from an over-earnest humanitarian impulse, close quote. And that is a really concise quote. That basically encapsulates how I feel about, you know, she's directed a few films, but how I feel about them. They're kind of overloaded thematically from my perspective. I'm going to vote with her on this. I agree with her in terms of the serious topic and the message and all that. But it does have that kind of club over the head feel to it sometimes. So, yeah, that's my major reservation. But Marie, back to your point, I mean, technically, in terms of skill set, I mean, she writes a solid script, and as a director, she's quite capable. I mean, you know, I'm not making huge claims for her, but you know, she directs a film really well. So you're absolutely right. I mean, she's a multi-hyphenate, as they would say in Hollywood, and she's good at all those things.
I will say this one last thing about In the Land of Blood and Honey. The reason that she decided to direct was that she says that she didn't trust it out of her hands. So by default, she ended up putting herself in as a director. That's a pretty gutsy thing to do, but you know, this is ferocious. This is Maleficent. She's just going to blaze ahead and, you know, and see what happens. She'd go on to direct a movie called Unbroken in 2014, which is about a near fatal plane crash in World War II and Olympian Louis Zamperini, who spends 47 days on a raft with two fellow crewmen before he's caught by the Japanese Navy and sent to a POW camp. Now, interestingly, Angelina Jolie and the real Louis Zamperini happen to live close to one another in the same Los Angeles neighborhood. And we've talked about this, I think, in every show, how interesting it is how people who become famous tend to also know a whole lot of other people in their circle of friends who all become famous, or they live near them, or that's their godfather, or that's their, you know, the parent's best friend, or whatever it is. So it's just an interesting little detail. And I thought that was a pretty good movie, Unbroken.
I liked it well enough, but again, I was looking at the Variety reviews, and they mentioned the fact that, you know, the film is kind of full of itself in some ways, and that they say, quote, it's a bit embalmed in its own nobility, close quote. You know, again, it's got the humanitarian message on the sleeve, if you will, but technically it's very well made. and it's quite involving, and it's a great human interest story. I just felt like the movie was kind of a bit too full of itself or a bit too obvious at times. And then when she goes on to direct another film, By the Sea, in 2015, here she is co-starring with Brad Pitt. And I really don't like that film at all because it strikes me as like a classic example of a vanity project. You know, a famous couple playing a couple on screen, if you will. What do you think of it, Marie?
I'm just going to go with it was okay. That's as much as I could say. I mean, I think anything she's attached to is automatically interesting because if nothing else, she's great to watch. And anything she's involved with, you know, just because I think she's gotten some credibility having not taken the easy road in terms of Hollywood roles and to actually spend her time doing humanitarian things and adopting children who maybe would have been left behind. These are all worthwhile things, which makes her, you know, an interesting person to follow. I want to make sure I close by talking about, when we opened, I mentioned she's a feminist icon. And the reason I say that is because her mother died of ovarian cancer. And Angelina Jolie had a test that tells you whether you're susceptible to that kind of cancer and also breast cancer. And finding out that she was probably likely to suffer from both those things, had her ovaries removed, had a double mastectomy, and then was very vocal about it and very matter of fact about, yes, I did this for health reasons. I am just as beautiful as I ever was. This did not take away any of my femininity. It was just such a very bold thing, very brave thing. And I think a lot of people took some comfort from that, knowing that, well, it didn't destroy Angelina Jolie. So, you know, it gave other people hope who might be struggling with those things. Anyway, that's a very serious way to end this particular episode. But don't forget to check out our other podcasts at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.